Okay, good morning. Let me start. So today, I continue the discussion of normalization at one loop for Phi-4. And I first summarize in a bit of a more, rigorous or just precise way what we did last time, where we introduce counterterm and show that it works to make the theory finite at one loop. And then I'm going to discuss the renormalization group equation, so the meaning of the renormalization scale and what it implies for the quantum theory. So first, let me remind what we did. Renormalization for Phi to the 4 at one loop. And I was considering, for simplicity, the massless theory. So in fact, we started from a theory which is given by the usual action of the Phi to the 4. But we showed that in order to control the short-distance singularity, the ultraviolet divergence, we have to change the action and to introduce counterterm. So what does this mean in a general setting? It means that we start from an action, and we define a functional integral, which is of the standard form, exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi. So I'm in four dimensions. But we are using an action which has a specific form, so let me call it the renormalized action, phi. So it has a standard form. Well, here I'm in four dimensions, so this is d4x. It contains the usual term d mu phi squared. It contains the usual mass term, and it contains the usual two-body interaction term, Phi-4 term. But what we did is that we introduced a term which is not the physical term, the physical mass. So let's call it B. We renormalize the mass, so in fact, the parameter in the action we used is not the coupling constant we dealt with, but some coefficient, we call it C. And in practice, if you start to play that game, you may expect that you also have to renormalize this term. So let's call this the renormalized action. So it's the most general Phi to the 4 action you can use, and we plug this into the functional integral. We quantize with this action. We quantize this action. Okay, and we compute correlation function, and we compute the effective action. And for instance, we compute what's going to call the renormalized effective action in the standard way. The same definition for the action we took before. But now we have to express. Our purpose is to express things and make things finite at a definite energy scale or momentum scale. Okay? So of course, we quantize this, but we have a cutoff in addition. So we have a cutoff or a regulator lambda, momentum cutoff. For instance, in our case, the momenta were all less or equal to lambda. This was a sharp cutoff. So everything here depends on the cutoff. And renormalization means that we want that the physics makes sense at a definite renormalization scale. So we define the theory to be massless, which means that, in fact, the two-point function, the renormalized two-point function computed with this, as a function of p was just p squared plus 2 loop terms, and the four-point function, remember, for some p's was defined to be the renormalized action, the renormalized coupling, I'm sorry, so the renormalized coupling is defined as the value of the four-point function for a definite, for a choice of momenta, which I choose for simplicity to be p equals some p reference or subsection point, which are of order mu, where mu is the renormalization scale. So we have a cutoff lambda and we have a renormalization scale, which is called mu. And that's a choice. So we can take, if it's an energy scale, we can take an electron EV, a MEV, a GEV, or something much, much smaller. That's our choice. It depends on the physical problem we are interested in. Okay. And so we have two parameters. We have the cutoff, which is something we need to build the path, the functional integral. We have the renormalization scale, which is the physical scale at which we work and at which we define what is the renormalized coupling, GR. And of course, we want to take the continuum limit in order to have a theory defined in a Minkowski spacetime or Euclidean spacetime, which means that in any case, this is fixed. This is our choice. This is much, much smaller than the ultraviolet cutoff, of course, and the ultraviolet cutoff, we let it go to infinity. Okay. And we saw that by this renormalization procedure, where mu is chosen, GR is fixed. Well, the physical mass is kept to zero because we want a massless theory. And we let lambda go to infinity. We have seen that the two-point function is finite, is given by this. The four-point function is finite. And in fact, then in this limit, the theory at one loop, the one loop theory is finite, which means that the limit when lambda goes to infinity of the renormalized effective action, which contains all the irreducible amplitude, the irreducible contribution of the irreducible diagram, is finite. So this means that, for instance, it means that the limit when lambda goes to infinity of gamma renormalized of phi, if we assume that it depends on lambda, exists at one loop. So it's a function. So in fact, you can write it as a function of the background field. That's just the source term for the irreducible function. And then it should be a function only of the parameter we have, G renormalized and mu. And the same for correlation functions. We can define correlation function, renormalized correlation function, out of this by inserting phi and taking the limit. So we can, this is the effective action. And similarly, the limit of phi of z1, phi of zn for the renormalized theory when lambda goes to infinity is a renormalized correlation function with n points, which depends on z1, zn, or gr, and mu, the Renormalized coupling constant and mu. Okay? So that's what it means. The limit is exists and is finite. So everything is finite. So this is the renormalized action, and this is a renormalized correlation function. Okay? And what we did is that we detailed the calculation, and what we showed is that in order to achieve this, we have to fine-tune or adjust the coefficient in zero normalized action expressed as a series in GR. So we compute it at one order, and at one order we found that this coefficient A, so the A is one in the classical series, and we showed that there is no need to introduce something at one loop. But B, the mass term, is zero at tree level, at the order of for the classical series, but we need to introduce a mass counter term in order to keep the renormalized theory massless. And finally, the coefficient C for the interaction term, which is GR classically, has to contain the coupling constant counter term, which is of order GR squared, because it's a one loop correction. And we found that it was 3 over 2, 1 over 4 pi squared, and there was a log, and log of lambda squared divided by mu squared. Okay, so this was the result of the explicit calculation. Okay, and once we do that, we computed, for instance, we have an explicit expression for the renormalized four-point function at one loop, which contains log of momenta divided by mu. Okay. So this was the result. Okay. This is my first blackboard. This is going to be my second blackboard. Okay. So everything is fine. And this is a general procedure. So in fact, it turns out that there are old theorem, which states that this works at all orders in perturbation theory. So in fact, when you compute the correlation function and apply this procedure at two loop order, you still have ultraviolet divergences. But you can introduce counter term at two loop. So term of order GR squared here, term of order GR cube here, and you need to introduce a counter term of order GR squared here too, which is absent for 5-4 theory. And you can fine tune them, keeping the definition, the fact that the two-point function is massless and behaves like that for p close to zero, and this, and then you get rid, the ultraviolet singularity are pushed to three loop. And then there are theorems, which are real theorem, mathematical theorem, which states that recursively you can do that, build that at whole order in perturbation theory. Yes?
Is that only for the 5-4
theory? Pardon?
Is that only for the 5-4?
No, that's valid for a large class of theories which are called renormalizable theory. So that's true for QED, that's true for gauge theory, so you have a control on that. And that's true for theory which are not renormalizable at d equal 4, but in other dimension. I'll mention that a bit later. Okay. So this is a theorem for
Okay.
So I'm not going to show this theorem. This would be a whole lecture. But I think there is some advanced lecture by Elvis Costello about renormalization theory view from a mathematical point of view. You might read that. Anyway, I come back to what it means for theory to be renormalizable, and in fact, why this calculation works. I try to come back to this point at the end of this lecture, giving a slightly different and bit more physical explanation. Okay, so I'll skip. At that point, of course, we consider only the massless theory. So I'm going to skip the case of the massive theory, but this work also for the massive theory. But then we have to define what is a renormalized mass MR, which is going to be different from this one. So this is a counter term if the theory is massless. And there is a counter term has to be adjusted and has an additional contribution if the theory is massive and you want to keep the physical mass fixed, okay, and finite. So I'm not going to do that in detail. It's a bit technical, but I think there is a tutorial devoted to that or a homework. So you are going to work this out. And there are also some details in the note. And now I want to discuss, because that's physically important, what's the meaning of this renormalization scale? And what are the consequences, which are the consequences of renormalization for the theory? So we are going to see something which is new compared to the classical theory. Because of course, the classical theory depends only on one parameter, the coupling constant, which is dimensionless in four dimensions. In four dimensions, GR is dimensionless. Okay? While the renormalized theory seems to depend on a new parameter, which has a dimension of a momentum, or mass, or an energy. So what's going on? We start from a theory which depends on one parameter. So different value of GR depends, characterize different massless theory, not physically equivalent, if you forget about rescalings of the distance. And we have a theory that depends on two parameters. So does it mean that the quantum theory, you know, generates some mass by some kind of non-perturbative effect? Well, in fact, not. Because you have to remember what mu. So mu is just a choice to construct the renormalized theory and to define the renormalized coupling. So what's the meaning of what is the meaning of mu, the renormalized scale? Well, it's just that this is a momentum scale and a point where you defined energy scale where GR is defined. So I define the renormalized coupling as being the value of the four-point function, or namely the strength of the interaction between particles at a given energy scale. But if you take the same theory, the same quantum theory, and measure this at a different mu, you are going to get a different result. So you get another renormalized coupling constant defined with reference to a different energy scale, but for the same theory. So in fact, this can be drawn in a picture that I have in my notes. You may consider the value of GR as a function of the energy scale, you see. And for a given theory, you compute or you measure in an experiment the four-point function, you deduce the value of GR, and you find some V1. If you have mu1. Now, for the same theory, that's going this way for phi to the 4, you take a higher energy, higher mass, then you are going to find a G2. Take another one, you are going to find a G3. But, so you have a line of renormalized G for the same theory, the same model. Now, if you take another model, phi 4, but for instance, you consider the theory where at the initial energy or renormalization scale, G is different. So you get G prime 1. Then you are going to repeat the calculation and you find another theory. So it is this curve which represents a theory. Different points are just different way to parameterize the same theory. So in some sense, you have a space of theory and you may parameterize them in different way by choosing a reference point. In some sense, it's, you can view this as just a change of coordinate in the space of theory. It's like you have a map, where the distance are measured in meters and maps where the distance are measured in kilometers, but they represent the same land or the same country, the same place. It's just as simple as that. Okay, so it's just a change of parametrization. See, it's a change of parametrization. Of the space of phi 4 theory. Okay. So, and you can check that explicitly by starting from the 4-point function, the explicit expression for the 4-point function, and 4-point function. So we have an irreducible 4-point function with momentum p1, p2, p3, p4. And we have seen that the 4-point function renormalized, which is a function of the p's of gr and mu, is given by gr and that's minus gr squared, 1 half, 1 over 4 pi squared, that's the same coefficient. But then I just add a log of mu squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared, plus the same term where I replace p2 by p3, plus the same term when I replace p2 by p4, because this is going to be symmetric. And you can check that if I change mu, I can reabsorb that into a redefinition of gr. Okay. And if I start from some mu naught, I choose it one, but let's assume that you have mu zero here, okay? Where the coupling constant is, where gr is some g zero, I am vomiting the renormalized subscript now because that's always renormalized coupling, okay? And you can check that if you take different mu, the same four-point function will be described by a new g, mu. This can be reabsorbed into a g of mu, so that the four-point function as a function of the same momenta G0 mu 0 is equal to gamma 4. I'm sorry, this is going to be a bit short. Of the theory defined with a reference for general mu and general G of mu. Okay. So this function, so these curves represent just the dependence in mu of this function. So this is just this plot represents the function G of mu. Yes. And you start from this. Of course, there are higher order two loop terms, but you can do explicitly the calculation. And what you find is that G of mu, the equation is that G0, the reference point, has to be equal to G of mu minus G of mu squared 3 over 2, 1 over 4 pi squared log of mu squared divided by mu 0 plus higher order terms. This is explicit expression, and you can invert that. Okay. So this is the explicit expression. Okay. And you see that this function G of mu depends on mu. And if you change mu, you fix G0, you change mu, this grows. So this concept G of mu is called the effective coupling at energy scale mu. And it's a function of mu. And you see that for phi to the 4, G of mu grows with mu. It grows like the log of mu. So the higher the energy, the stronger the effective coupling. Strong at high energy, or if you prefer, at small distances. Weak at large distance, which is an important feature of 5 to the 4. Okay. So now, so this feature was, I think, was discovered in the 50s, 60s in QED, because QED has the same feature, quantum electrodynamics. So QED has the same feature. QED has a similar feature. And the fact that the coupling constant, well, for QED, the coupling constant is a fine structure constant, it's alpha, but it's the same. It's the square of the charge of the electron. It has similar feature, and this was discovered by, I think, by, well, the name of Gell-Mann and Lau, but also by Stückelberg and Petermann, I think. So this is an old concept. And this, you know, rather than having an explicit expression, in fact, since you have a continuous curve, in fact, in general, the way the effective coupling constant depends on the energy scale is better written in a differential form. So you take an infinitesimal deformation and see how it varies, because it's a continuous deformation. And this runs, this leads us to an important concept, which is the concept of a beta functions, which are called beta functions. So the domination that the function is beta, I think, calls comes from another important work, which was by Callan and by Simancic, which has a later. Okay. So they are called beta functions because in the first paper they were denoted by beta. But this is a generic denomination for the kind of function now. Okay. So the beta function tells is just the logarithmic derivative of this function g of mu as a function of mu. So it is defined as. So I'm going to define the beta function for the coupling constant. G. I define beta of g. So it's a function of g, but it refers to the variation of g. Okay. The beta function is just how the renormalized coupling as a function of g varies when I change mu. Okay. And for the same theory. So that's the theory is fixed. And for different energy scale, I see which is the value of the effective renormalized coupling constant. That's a renormalized coupling here. And I take the derivative with respect to log of the energy, to the log because of the log, which are important here. Okay? And of course, if you want to compute this in a precise way, starting from the theory with a cutoff, same theory means that if you have a cutoff, the coefficient A, B, and C are fixed. See, so this means that, or if you prefer, that if you have chosen a reference energy scale, G0 is fixed. You choose a point here, starting point, and you move along this curve. You don't change anything. Okay? So you can do the calculation. Starting from this formula, that's easy. Simply, you take an infinitesimal mu, and beta of g is a function of g of mu. It's not a function of g zero. This means that if you are at one point here, you are at a given mu, you have g of mu, and you vary a little bit. So the function depends only where you are here. You can do the calculation. And you find that, so this is the definition. Okay. And it turns out that this definition depends not, do not depend on where you started from. It depends only on where you are. So you are, you have a set of curves. If you are here, you are interested in what's happening when you move along the curve. So it doesn't depend on where you started from originally. It depends only on where you are on the curve. Okay. So this is a general definition. So this is a general definition for a theory which depends on only one parameter, which is the case of the 5-4 theory, massless. Okay. This is a general definition. Okay. And for phi to the 4, you just take the calculation which is there, and what you find is that beta of g is 3 over 4 pi squared g squared plus higher order terms. Which have our order g cube. So this is a one loop. This is a 2. This is a 1-loop beta function. Okay. And you see that the fact that it grows with mu means, yes?
The definition of the beta function, should it be the derivatives with respect to ln mu?
Yeah, that's the same. It's a mu d d mu is just the same as d of d log mu. Yeah. That's why, since there are logs here, when you make derivative respect to log of mu, in fact, you have a log of mu squared, which is a 2 times log of mu. So the 1/2 disappear here. And you have 3 terms. So this is why you get a 3 over 4 pi squared. OK. OK. So. The fact that the theory is weak or free at large distance and strongly coupled at small distance is just a consequence of the fact that the coefficient of the beta function is positive. So the beta function, let me write the beta function as a function g. It's a parabola at the origin. So the fact that it is positive means this implies that you have what's called asymptotic large distance, so if you prefer, infrared freedom. And you have a theory strongly coupled in the infrared, no, in the ultraviolet. Okay, so this term of asymptotic freedom is important. Okay. And so this property holds for phi 4. It holds for QED, but for other theories like Young-Mills theory, namely gauge theories, which are non-abelian, then it's the opposite. The beta function is negative. The sign is opposite, which means that you have asymptotic freedom in the ultraviolet at high energy, small distance. And that's very important for the physics of gauge theories. OK. So now, let me see what does it mean, and in particular, why do we call this effective coupling constant? And I'm going to discuss a bit the concept of Callan-Simoncic equation. Because the fact that these are two parameters which are, you know, not independent for a field theory, same theory, means that now we can use this to see how the correlation function or the scattering amplitude of the theory vary with the momenta. Here we just check how this varies with mu and g. But now we can recast this the definition of P. So let's see now how, for instance, the four-point function, which is a function of four momenta, varies with the momenta P. Yes?
So we're analyzing all of this using Feynman diagrams, which is a perturbative tool. So yeah. How can we be sure that we can trust the beta functions in the UV regime? Where the coupling is strong.
When the coupling is strong, that's a good question, because when the coupling is strong, well, either you are able to compute the beta function at higher orders and go into the non-perturbative regime, or, and in that case I agree, then you have no control from perturbation theory of what's going on. And that's the case in QE, in gauge theories. In gauge theory, what this renormalization group calculation tells you is just that the coupling become strong. So for instance, you know, gauge theories are a theory of quarks interacting by changing gluons, but the gluons are charged, so the gluons interact, the gauge field interacts between themselves, so they attract or repel depending on the charge in a very complicated way. And what the calculation here states is just that the coupling becomes strong, but it doesn't tell you what's happening. Well, what's happening, if you have been at the colloquium, for instance, is the fact that there is confinement, which is a strongly non-perturbative phenomenon. It means that, you know, the strength, the attraction strength between quarks is not one over, the potential is not one over the distance like the Coulomb force, which is prediction of quantum electrodynamics, but it grows linearly. So that the quarks are, you know, connected by some kind of strength, which, and the force becomes more and more stronger, so they cannot get, you know, become free. That's a non-perturbative phenomenon, so there are a lot, so it's called confinement. There is a lot of, you know, of studies about that. Physicists consider that now they understood quite well why this happens, but it's difficult to make calculation. But you cannot study that purely by perturbation theory. So depending on the theory, the ultraviolet behavior can be different. There are theories where it's known that there is confinement. There are other theories with topological terms, for instance, where in fact some new scale invariant theory emerge. So some of the degrees of freedom remain massless, but not the original one. And that's something which happens in condensed matter, for instance. So that's when you go into the non-perturbative regime, you have to rely on non-perturbative methods.
But we can, like, hearing in 5-4 theory.
Yes.
5-4. So we have that graph in,
yes,
like the first graph.
Yes.
But we know that we're doing computations just in the weak coupling regime.
Yes.
So just in the first.
Yes.
Part. But we obtain a beta function and we just extrapolate it until,
yeah,
really,
yes,
strong coupling. So is that valid?
In fact, that's not valid. This is a perturbative calculation. So as long as we have in perturbation theory, we are on safe ground. But now, since at large distance, at small distance, the coupling becomes large, non-perturbatively, we cannot really, as you said, trust perturbative calculation. And in fact, we have strong reason to believe, most physicists believe, that because of this, 5-4 theory is not consistent at high energy. It breaks down. For instance, unitarity breaks down. And this is a phenomenon which was already raised by Landau in the 60s. So it's an old problem. But the same for QED. So QED as itself, which is the most successful, you know, physical theory we have, it allows to predict something up to, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 15 digits in some case in atomic physics, is not a consistent theory at very high energy. But the energy is very, very, very high. So it has no, this problem has no, you know, has no consequence for the physics we do in laboratories. But the fact that the theory is not consistent as itself doesn't mean that it cannot be embedded into a bigger theory which is consistent. And for instance, for QED, we know that QED, in fact, is just a small part of the electroweak theory, which is more consistent because it has gauge field, which is itself, we expect, embedded into a grand unified theory, which might be embedded into some kind of, you know, string theory or M theory or whatever your theory is of quantum space-time. And the additional fields that you see only at high energy will take care of this problem.
Okay.
Yes?
Can you have a theory in which the beta function does not make the coupling go strong at long distances? At short
yes,
distances,
yes. For instance, well, there are cases where you have a theory which is like that. The beta function is like that at small distance. But you may, for instance, imagine that you have two loop terms or high order terms which goes in the other direction. You see? So here you have a point where the beta function is zero, which means that the theory is scale invariant. And so when you look at the ultraviolet flow of the coupling, I'm going to write this later, the coupling becomes big, but then it fixes there. And on the other direction, it goes like that. And in that case, the theory is consistent. It's coupled, but not infinitely strongly coupled. But it is non-perturbative. Because there is a fixed point. And well, some people have tried to make this working for QED or for 5^4. They said, maybe there is a fixed point which makes the theory consistent. And there have been a lot of studies. There have been numerical Monte Carlo studies on lattice gauge theory. There doesn't seem to be such a fixed point for 5^4 of a QED. But there are examples where there are such theories, such fixed points for other theories. Yes? Because it's at a finite distance from the origin.
G is still finite, is it just?
Like it's finite, but okay. Yeah, you can, yeah. If you manage to resum to compute enough terms of the beta function and have a control of how to resum them, then you can say something whether this is true or this is not true.
Imagine if the maximum of that function is
what?
Like what? You have to check in your flow if you're going to really strong G's before you reach that point.
Yeah.
In order to be consistent, because if you go to really high G's and it starts going down,
yeah.
Can you try?
Well, then it's I agree. That's a matter of that's a matter of extrapolation, and then you are it's a complicated stuff.
Okay.
Well, there are cases where the theory can be solved. I think in some Vesumino theories, which are. Well, I'm not sure, but where you can get non-perturbative information on the theory, and so whether you have such fixed point or not. But that's a possibility. That's a scenario. That's a scenario for what is called asymptotic safety. Okay. Okay. Well, okay. So let's go back to my question here, which is, can we use this, the fact that we have a beta function, to have information on the high energy behavior of the theory, namely the high energy behavior of the correlation functions? And well, it's not that complicated. What you have to do is, okay, let me start from the specific example of the four-point function at one loop. So I get gamma 4 of some p's. Let me just write z. So g is the renormalized coupling. Coupling mu is the renormalization scale, and this is g minus d squared. You have this coefficient, 1/2 pi squared. You have log of p1 plus p2. Let me have my notation. So it's mu squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared plus the three other terms. Okay. And now the question is, what happens if I rescale the momenta? So for instance, I'm not sure I have my notes here. Okay. If I change the momenta into new momenta, which are p, let's say, divided by s, where s is a global scaling factor. See, I divide by s because having s larger than 1 means having smaller momenta, smaller p's, so larger distances. So s corresponds to a global scaling factor on the distances. In high energy physics, people deal with scaling of the momenta. So then you have to consider S, the inverse of S. Okay, so 1 over S is going to a scaling factor on the momenta, energies. Okay. Well, remember, in this formula, G is dimensionless. So if I want to compare gamma 4 of the p's divided by s, g and mu, with the original one, this means that here I divide p by s. So s is on the numerator. So this is just, that's exact. That's dimension analysis. This is the same thing of gamma 4 of the original p's, the original g, but then mu s. Okay? This is just, this. Okay, so now I can recast the change in the momenta into a change in mu. And then I know what it is, because this is just gamma 4 of p g of s mu Well, I've changed mu by a factor s. So g of s is obtained from g by solving this equation. So g of s is given by s d ds of g of s equal beta of g of s, with g of 1 equal g, the original g. So you see, g of s is just the effective coupling constant when we rescale the distances. No, I'm sorry. There is it's an important difference. There is a factor mu minus. Sorry. Because it's g of s mu times s which is given. So there is a minus sign, because here we do not change g and mu accordingly. We change mu and we recast it in s. Okay. So g of s is obtained by integrating the flow equation given by this. Okay. And so now we have a minus, so this goes in the opposite direction. So this should go in the same direction. Okay. And you can view that also there is this minus s, because s is a change in the distance, while changing mu is a change in the momenta. So it goes in the opposite way. So we have this flow equation, s d s of g equal minus beta. Okay. And for the okay, and now, of course. Yes?
I'm not sure I understand that equation. Like, is beta of g of s not defined by this equation here?
Yeah. No, it's just that you see that here. I have an equation which states that the theory for mu g0 is equivalent to g of mu divided by mu0 mu, you see? That's what we did there. And the relation between this g of mu divided by mu0 and the original mu is given by the equation that mu d d mu of g of mu divided by mu zero equal beta of g of mu divided by mu zero, with the initial condition that g of 1 is g. Okay. So now I'm looking for a g of s such that g of s mu is equivalent to the original g and mu s. So I have to choose mu zero equal mu s. Okay? Yeah. So that G of S mu, And so, so you see the factor S is mu divided by mu zero. I'm sorry, factor S is mu zero divided by mu. So S is the inverse of mu. So the mu dd mu becomes a minus S dds, which explains the change of sign. Yes?
So over on this board, G is a function which takes in an energy parameter, like mu, right? G is a function
yes.
of mu over here. But now we're putting in dimensionless arguments. Is this a different function now?
No, because you just have to solve this equation anyway. In fact, when you write this equation, this is an equation with respect to the ratio of mu divided by mu zero, in any case, you see. You can write this as beta of g of mu divided by mu zero. You can rewrite this equation as, it's a bit of math, maybe I've been a bit confused. You can rewrite this equation by stating that beta of g of mu divided by mu zero equal mu divided by mu zero d over d of mu divided by mu zero of g of mu divided by mu zero with the constraint that, of course, still that g of one equal g and mu zero is fixed. So it's the same. This equation is the same as this one. So this mu divided by mu zero is just the inverse of the coefficient S here, this rescaling over the distance. So this equation, in fact, is precisely, so this equation, if you write it like that, this is precisely beta of g of, well, of g of, well, of s minus 1 equal s minus 1, so it's minus s dds g of s minus 1, which, so it works, I think. Okay. Okay. I think maybe I'll correct slightly my notes to make this clearer. Anyway, this works. Okay. Okay. So I just want to end up with the fact that you can reabsorb. You can reabsorb the rescaling in the momenta into a change in the coupling constant. Okay. And this implies, in particular, an important equation, because you can write it again as this, as differentiating with respect to S. You see? And if you differentiate this with respect to S, you end up that sum over the momenta of pi d over d pi gamma 4 pi g in mu with a factor minus 1 is equal to S dg of S divided by S times, which is minus beta of g at S equal 1, times d dg of gamma 4 of p g mu. So you get a relation between a particular derivative with respect to the external momenta of the four-point function and its derivative with respect to the coupling constant with a term which involves the beta function. You see, so this is V minus, so it's sum over I of pi d d p I minus beta of g d d g of the four-point function of the p's and g. And here mu doesn't play any role. It's valid for any choice of all equals 0. Okay. So this is called the Callan-Simancyk. Simancyk equation. Okay. Well, one last remark. This is valid at one loop. In general, if you go at two loops for phi to the four, we have seen that at one loop, the two-point function have this diagram plus this diagram plus this diagram, okay? And this diagram, if you make the calculation, it has an ultraviolet divergence of the form p squared log lambda, where p is the momentum. Okay? And it's similar to QED at one loop, where in the propagator of the electron, of the fermions, you have this diagram, the emission and absorption of a virtual photon, which is a one-loop diagram, but which contains a divergence of the form p slash log lambda. Okay, and that's simply because, well, you do the calculation. I think you might have done the calculation. No, you have not done the calculation. But this, at one loop, there is a log lambda proportional to the momenta. And remember, the propagator of the fermion, this is a fermion, in QED, is 1 over p slash. And here, the propagator of the boson in phi 4 is 1 over p squared. So this divergence at two loop in phi 4, or this divergence at one loop in QED, renormalize the propagator. So they renormalized A. So this is called wave function or a field renormalization. So A is no more equal to 1. It's 1 plus something that contains a log of the cutoff. Okay. And this changes slightly the argument. Yes?
I don't understand. understand the top equation on this board.
This one?
You got the Callan-Simoncic. No, on the other side, at the very start of this board.
This one?
Yeah, I don't.
Well, that's simply that I take this formula. And I just, this is valid for any S, finite scaling factor. But then I can just differentiate it with respect to S. So I take the derivative with respect to S at S equal 1 of this equation. So the derivative with respect to S here gives this, because the left-hand side depends on S only through its dependence in the external momenta. Okay. And the right-hand side depends on S here just by through the dependence of G, which depends on S. So when I make a derivative with respect to S, I have to take just the derivative with respect to G times the derivative of G with respect to S.
That factor of S out front to that.
And then I set S equal 1. So, this, so I take, you see, I take this equation. It's a bit of, I'm sorry, no, this is this one. I take this identity, this equation. Okay. I take this equation that I'm drawing here, something equals something, which depends on S. And since it's valid for any S, I can take its derivative with respect to S at S equal 1. And I get this. This Callan-Simoncic equation. Okay? So it's just, you know, a way to write a general equation under the transformation under rescaling in a differential form. That's enough to have the differential form. Okay. Okay, so let me go back. I realize that. Okay, so let me go back to the fact that what's happening when you have a wave function renormalization? Then you have to be a bit more careful because the wave function renormalization of the field implies that you have an additional dependence in mu. Because, of course, the counter term for the field has to depend on mu divided by lambda also. And so, this implies that there is an additional term somewhere here, taking into account the fact that there is a field renormalization. Because basically, it means that in general, when you have a field renormalization, the relation between the function here and the function involves a global wave function or field renormalization factor here. So in general, what you have, you can go back here, is that if I want to change this, G zero, mu zero is not exactly equal to gamma four. Of PG mu, but you have an additional factor z, which is a function of mu divided by mu zero, something like that. which takes into account the fact that you have a field renormalization. So fortunately, in phi to the fourth, it appears only at two loop. But in QED, it appears already at one loop, and that's important. It's a renormalization of the wave function of the electron in QED. OK. OK, so now let me just, I have 10 minutes left. So let me discuss view renormalization from a slightly different point of view. So let me go back here. Let me go back here and let me discuss renormalization of phi 4 viewed from the point of view of scale invariants. Oh, I should have kept the action anyway. So why does this work? Why this program works? Okay. This program works because the massless phi to the fourth series has a very important property. In D equal 4, massless phi to the four is scale invariant. It means that if you consider the action of phi is d4x, one half of d mu phi squared plus g divided by factorial phi to the four. This is a classical action. Okay? Now, what is a scale transformation? Imagine that you consider in your space a field configuration. This is phi, and this is x. That's one of the direction. So you take a field configuration, which is going to vanish at infinity, so it has a finite action, and consider the rescaled action by scaling the distance. So something like that. So I define this phi s. And phi s, so I change, I have phi, and I go to phi s, where phi s is defined in this way, just by phi s of x. So that's the same function of phi. But I have rescale the distances, so this is x divided by s, and I divide by 1 over s here. So this is phi, and this is phi s. It's the same, but spread and squashed with this factor. So why do I choose this specific factor? That's because the scaling dimension of phi is a length to the power minus 1 in d equal 4. Because this action, this has a dimension of distance, this has a dimension of the inverse of the distance squared. So if phi has a dimension of the inverse of the distance, this is dimensionless. Okay. So the scaling dimension of phi is the inverse of a length. The action is dimensionless. And G also. G has a dimension of a length to the power of zero. It's a pure number. And this has a consequence that in four dimensions, the classical action of this new configuration is equal to the classical action of the original configuration for any S. I'm sorry, for any field configuration, phi. So it's not an all-shell symmetry. It's an off-shell global symmetry. Sorry, in English, the theory. It's a symmetry that mixes fields and space. So it mixes phi and x. But it's a global symmetry. It's called the scale symmetry or dilation symmetry. Okay. And so for any C and the same G. So G doesn't change. No. So that's for the classical theory. Classical. Now, what about the quantum theory? In the quantum theory, we expect this symmetry to be broken. Because we have seen that if we make a change in the scale, because of the renormalization, the effective coupling constant changes. So, gauge theory, in the quantum theory, this cannot work. If I make a change in the distance, the effective coupling of the theory change. So G is not unchanged when you perform a scale transformation. So in other words, this symmetry, because of renormalization, is spoiled. The scale of the dilation symmetry is spoiled by quantum corrections. And that's a very important phenomenon in quantum theory, which is called anomaly. A quantum anomaly. You have a theory which classical theory has a symmetry, and the quantum theory doesn't have this symmetry. That's a typical quantum effect, a very important one, which comes from renormalization. If the theory was, had no logs of lambda, then it would not have this anomaly, and the theory would be still scale invariant. Okay, and in fact, there are examples of theories which have no ultraviolet divergence, and which are, therefore, the quantum theory scale invariant. The most famous example is the supersymmetric n equal 4 Young-Mills theory in d equal 4. But this supersymmetric theory has a lot of symmetries, which makes it work. But phi to the 4 has this symmetry. Okay, so phi 4 is anomalous. QED is anomalous. Young-Mill theory are anomalous. And this has very important effect because this implies this, you know, asymptotic freedom effects in the infrared or in the ultraviolet. Okay? And anomalies, you know, scale anomalies are not the first example. The first example of ANI was discovered, I think, in the 50s or beginning of the 60s by Jack Eve and Adler, I think, and also some Swiss guy, I think. It's called the axial anomaly. In massless QED, which was the first example of an anomaly. And I have almost nothing. And well, so what is the signification of all what we did in the in terms of symmetries? When you have a symmetry, you have Noether theorem. We said that there is a conserved current. Okay. And you can compute the current associated to scale scale invariance. And if I am not mistaken, so there is a conserved current, G mu, associated to scale. And in fact, this current is easily constructed out of the stress energy tensor current, because the stress energy tensor is the current associated to invariance by translation, so change of coordinates, global shifts. And the difference between the scale and the translation is that here you are making a translation which varies with a point in space. So G mu for the scale invariance can be computed out of, in general, this is going to be T mu nu times X nu. And if I am not mistaken, this is plus phi D mu phi for phi to the 4. This is the stress energy, or the energy momentum tensor, but with an x mu, because we are making translation that depends on x. And this takes into account the fact that the dimension of the scale of the field is minus 1. So there is a plus 1 here, which comes from this fact. OK. So, and for phi to the 4, well, you compute it because you know what is T mu of phi. And what you get is that this is D mu phi, D mu phi. I'm sorry. No, you know T mu nu. And so you can compute G mu. And you expect that T mu G mu should be equal to 0. Well, that's true classically. But what is d mu g mu? You make the exercise. That's an exercise. And what you find is d mu g mu is, well, you can compute in two ways. You can compute that this is, well, you can compute this in dimension d different from 4, where simply you have to change the factor 1 over s by the factor 1 over s. And then you found that d mu g mu is d minus 4 g over 4 phi to the 4. So you find that indeed it's 0 in d equal 4. So classically, this is 0 in d equal 4. Okay. But because of quantum effect, This turns out to be non-zero. In a quantum theory, if you are careful enough, you compute the calculation. For instance, this is a composite operator, so you have to take into account the renormalization of the operator. And what you find is that d mu g mu is, so it should be proportional to phi to the 4, but there is a one loop contribution here, which is precisely the beta function. Which is non-zero. So this is the anomaly. So the beta function is equal to the trace of the anomaly. Okay, so I end up here. Well, maybe I'll discuss a bit more renormalization on Monday, because I see there are so many questions that presumably I need to answer a few points. But thank you.